Portichello Foundation is proud to introduce you to Superior Educator Jill Protzel from Copper Harbor's One Room Schoolhouse. Jill is an amazing educator that teaches students from pre-K through 7th grade. Jill went over, above, and beyond during COVID shutdowns and still does today. You would not believe how much extra time she took to make sure that all the children received what was needed while teaching virtually. If you know an amazing educator like Jill, go to superioreducators.org and nominate them to be recognized as the next Superior Educator.
Welcome to Copper Country Today on this Easter Sunday morning. Happy Easter to you. I'm Todd Van Dyke. Our program is brought to you by the Portage Health Foundation. Of course, you can learn more about them and their mission at phfgive.org. The weather is changing, and of course, as we move into the spring and the early parts of the summer, the potential for severe weather raises its head across the Copper Country, so I thought we'd update things with Matt Zika from the National Weather Service office in Marquette. Welcome back to the show, Matt.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on, and happy Easter to you.
Well, thank you for spending some time with us this morning. I've got to ask you to start out with here. I read an article this week that said that the United States set a record for the most tornadoes ever experienced in the month of March. And I've heard this before, that severe weather seems to be getting worse, more frequent across the nation. Are you finding that really to be true as you watch the weather?
You know, there are some signs that the storms are maybe a little bit more extreme than they used to be, say, 30 or 40 years ago. What you read and saw about the March tornado record is true. It was a very active month for severe weather across the Deep South into the Southern Plains states. So there were a lot of tornadoes this year compared to, obviously, the last several years. And by setting a record during the month of March, obviously, historically, it was a very active month. So whether or not the storms are, I guess, more frequent or more intense, it just may be there's more folks that are out observing them, or more population centers that are more vulnerable to these storms when they occur now. So we're hearing more about the damage that they're causing.
Well, and with the 24-hour news cycle and all of the news channels and weather channels watching things 24/7, if there's a blip in the weather at this point, we hear about it, don't we?
Absolutely. And, you know, with social media being what it is, I mean, a day doesn't go by where somebody doesn't have a phone camera in their hand and they're showing, you know, what's going on in their backyard. So, you know, years ago, 20 years ago, a lot of things probably went undetected. But nowadays, you know, something unusual happens with regards to the weather, we're hearing about it almost instantaneously and immediately. And so the word definitely gets out.
And kind of along that same line, I can remember some years ago that the word used to be that tornadoes never happened in the Upper Peninsula. We were like immune from them. But over the last several years, I don't know if I've seen actual tornadoes, but certainly I've started, and maybe it's just my imagination, correct me if I'm wrong, I seem to have noticed more, at least tornado watches being posted up even here into the Copper Country. Are we seeing a little bit more of that activity in our region?
I mean, there's not a clear trend as far as more active severe weather here in the UP. We definitely can have some pretty extreme events. And on a typical year, we average one tornado in the UP. Now, fortunately, we are, I won't say permanently saved, but the Great Lakes offer us some protection from typical tornado weather patterns that they have further south into Wisconsin. So even when we do have tornadoes up here, oftentimes they're relatively weak. That's not to discount that they can't do any damage, because they definitely can. But the main focus here in the UP are the thunderstorms, or the lines of thunderstorms, that produce the straight line winds that can do damage over a much more wide area. And folks who are out camping and in our state parks, I mean, they're very vulnerable when it comes to those storms during the summer season.
Yeah, the state parks have, at least some of them in the UP, over the last several years, have upgraded their warning systems because of that, haven't they?
They have, yep. On the West End, I know in the Porkies, and then on the East End of the UP, a couple of the state parks over there, they do have some notification systems to warn folks when severe weather is about to approach them. And so it provides at least a little lead time for folks to get to a safe location.
Let's go off on that tangent, because there are people, obviously we're an outdoor society here in the summer. We love to get out on the trails. We love to go out and camp. And that tends to leave us in isolated places, perhaps remote places, perhaps in places where we don't have cell service. We don't have access to the things we normally have access to warn us about things. What precautions should we take as we head out into the wilderness to keep abreast of what's happening with the weather?
Well, I mean, when it comes to that, the first thing is obviously being aware. And that may be a plan that starts a couple of days before you're beginning your adventure out into the wilderness, or, you know, if you're going on a hike into some rural or remote areas, knowing a day or two ahead of time if there's going to be the potential for significant weather. And then the day of, then you know that you have to have a slight heightened sense of awareness. Now, while you may be beyond cell phone coverage in those areas and may not be able to get alerts to your phone, there are simple options like portable weather radios that would provide weather information. Now, in urban settings nowadays, the weather radio functionality is kind of losing a little bit of its steam because people are always directly connected with their cell phone. But here in the UP, there is value for all the boating interests that go on, and for a lot of the areas that are don't have cell service, weather radio provide coverage in those areas and let folks know when active weather is on the way.
Are there still people who don't understand that you guys broadcast weather information 24/7?
Of course there is, you know, and there's lots of confusion about between the weather service and the different media outlets that exist across the UP and across the country, and they're always kind of put hand in hand together. But the weather service does provide 24-hour, 7-day-a-week service with regards to weather warnings, weather forecasts. We have our weather radio broadcasts with multiple transmitters across the UP that are continuously broadcasting weather information. So it is a 24-hour-day, 7-day-a-week operation at the weather service, and all that information that we send out is available to the public, media outlets, everybody else to take and use and make good decisions using that information.
And to receive that, you do have to have a special radio, but they are widely available and not terribly expensive, are they?
Correct. Yeah, they are not that expensive at all. It's just a simple search on a search engine looking for weather radios, and you're going to find lots of them available via, you know, Amazon or wherever it is. And, you know, for less than probably $25, you can find a very effective, simple, portable weather radio if you're going to be heading out camping and hiking and things like that.
Yeah, get a battery-operated one, or you can even get some that if you crank them for 30 seconds or 60 seconds, they'll run for 2 or 3 hours based on the energy that that creates, so you don't have to worry about batteries running out. Because, you know, we in the radio broadcast business always try to send on warnings and watches and such as soon as we get that information. But you may not have availability, accessibility to us. You may not have accessibility to your cell phone where those types of alerts also appear. And that's the one kind of rock solid thing you can count on is those weather service radio stations. So please, if you're an outdoor person, especially, you'll want to invest in that as you go out and about here in the Copper Country this summer. You mentioned the straight line winds. I've had so many instances over the last years where people have said a tornado came through. And I say, no, that wasn't a tornado. Well, a whole bunch of trees blew down. Explain the difference between a straight line wind event and a tornado.
Well, when it comes to identifying or actually figuring out if it was a tornado or if it was straight line winds, most of the time here in the UP, the damage is going to be caused by straight-line winds. And if there is question or if there is doubt whether or not it was a tornado or straight-line winds, oftentimes we'll come out and actually do a field survey and look at the damage that was created by the strong winds. And based off the way the damage or the tree damages, the way the trees are laying, whether or not a convergent pattern towards one center line, which would be indicative of a tornado, or if it's just a all diverging, so basically like a steamroller came through and laid everything down in one direction, it's a clear indicator that you have straight line winds. Now, we don't want to discount, obviously, those straight line winds because they can hit speeds up to 100 miles per hour. We've had several instances over the last several years of straight line winds of that magnitude. So the damage that's going to be created may look like it's tornado-like and pretty extreme, but oftentimes they're not. It's not actually a tornado producing that damage. And the way that, like I said, the damage is laying is going to be the indicator to let us know that clearly it was straight-line winds that caused the damage.
Yeah, we had a situation like that about a year and a half ago, I think it was, north of Barriga. And this it was very tightly packed, but people said, oh, it was a tornado. And I said, no, all the trees are laying in the same direction. That's a straight-line wind event, but it was very dramatic.
Oh, yes, and it can be, and it could be very over a very short distance to where you have a lot of extreme damage, and then you go, you know, maybe half a mile up the road, and there's hardly any damage at all. And that's just the way the downdrafts come down out of the thunderstorm over a small area, or not to get too technical, or a little microburst kind of just came out of a thunderstorm and caused some very localized damage. But because all the trees are diverging from where the wind hit the ground, it's a clear indicator of straight-line winds and not a tornado.
Talking with Matt Zika from the National Weather Service here on the program this morning. And again, thanks for joining me for the show here, Matt. Let's take a look now at some of the things that we might be experiencing over the next few weeks and months, starting with the most common thing, I guess, that we encounter, thunderstorms. When do you issue a severe thunderstorm watch? At what point do you upgrade it to a severe thunderstorm warning?
Well, the Weather Service, for as long as I could remember, has always used a tiered system to start the awareness early on and then lead up to the part where you actually should be taking action. And the awareness often starts days ahead of a significant weather event, where via social media, some of the statements from the National Weather Service will say that a front's going to be coming through the area 3 days from now, and there's going to be the potential for some active weather. Once we get to the actual day of the event, if the conditions look like they are coming together and there's going to be a window of time, say 6 to 8 hours from now, of when there will be the potential for severe weather, the Storm Prediction Center in Norman, Oklahoma will issue an outlook or a watch area to say, be prepared for the next 6 to 8 hours for the potential for severe weather. At the watch phase, that's not the time where you have to be going and seeking shelter. But when you hear an actual severe thunderstorm warning, tornado warning issued by the Weather Service office here in Marquette for your immediate area, that's the time to take action. And that's when people will be hearing the blaring sounds on radio stations saying there's a severe thunderstorm warning or tornado warning. If people have a cell phone, and if we think that thunderstorm is going to have winds in excess of 80 miles per hour or it's a tornado warning, you'll get an automatic alert on your cell phone to let you know that you're in a hazard area and to seek shelter. The lower end severe thunderstorm warnings will not do that immediate activation to your cell phone. So if winds are only going to be 60 miles per hour with small hail, that's not something that will activate your cell phone unless you have a third party app on your phone that is alerting you to severe weather in your local area.
So 60 miles an hour isn't considered severe. I think that's pretty gusty myself.
Yeah, the definition of a severe thunderstorm actually is 60 mile an hour winds and 1 inch diameter hail. But
wow.
Years ago, when the FCC got together with FEMA and the Weather Service, and they developed this the wireless emergency alerting system, which sends direct alerts to cell phones, they didn't want every single severe thunderstorm warning activating people's cell phones, because there's thousands of those issued throughout a year and across the country, and they thought that would be a little bit of overkill. So for the actual alert direct to a cell phone, we have to hit a higher threshold or a higher threat for severe weather within that thunderstorm warning. So 80-mile-an-hour winds will automatically activate a cell phone alert, and if there's a tornado warning, and if there's a flash flood warning as well, will automatically activate a cell phone alert, so folks are aware of the severe weather in their area.
Tornado warning comes through. Obviously, we don't experience that a lot in our area. What do I do to stay safe?
What you would do in a severe thunderstorm, and so that would be get inside the most interior room inside your house. So if you're outside and you see the dark skies coming, or you hear an alert on the radio saying there is a tornado warning for your area, go inside and seek shelter and wait till the storm moves past. Fortunately, here in the UP, when we do have our tornadoes, like I said, they're relatively weak, so they're not going to be like the destructive ones we see in Oklahoma and Texas, where if you're not below ground, your survivability rate is very, very low. But here in the UP, as long as you're in the most interior room inside your house, away from windows, that's going to provide adequate protection for the severe weather that we see here in the UP.
I've been told that the bathroom is sometimes a safe place because there's plumbing around it that reinforces it. Is that true?
That is true, yeah. So the goal is you want to put as many walls between you and the outside as possible. So by going into a bathroom, obviously, you do have the plumbing through the walls that provides some added reinforcement, or to get into a bathtub, especially if folks are out traveling in more active severe weather parts of the country. If they're in the south and there is a very strong tornado potential, those are the places that people definitely want to go and seek shelter when the really big tornadoes are occurring.
I am outside when this happens. I'm driving in my car. I'm hiking the North Country Trail. How do I protect myself in those circumstances, Matt?
Well, it definitely gets a little bit more challenging at those points because there's so many trees up here in the UP. So if you're outside, you know, you don't want to be surrounded by all those trees, but then you don't want to be out in a completely open field either where you're susceptible to lightning strikes. So you kind of want to find a low area where you can kind of crouch down and wait for the storm to move past. If you are near your vehicle and you can get into an area where you don't have the threat of trees falling on top of it, for the severe weather we have here in the UP, your vehicle will provide enough protection that it would be a safe place to go. Now, I wouldn't recommend seeking shelter from a big tornado if you're traveling on an interstate down through Missouri and Kansas and in those areas. But here in the UP, since the top winds of a tornado are typically going to be 80, 90, maybe 100 miles per hour, a vehicle will provide protection as long as you don't have to worry about trees falling onto your vehicle.
We're not going to have any instances here like they had down south the other day, that video that went viral of the kid driving the pickup truck that got turned over two or three times and then drove away.
Yeah, that was crazy. And in that case, those winds were probably maybe around 100 miles per hour or just over that, where it actually rolled his truck over. But fortunately, the winds weren't strong enough to where it would continuously roll the vehicle. But that was a very dramatic video that I think most have seen because it went viral, and just crazy that he was able to then drive his truck away.
Yeah,
down the road afterwards.
Very fortunate young man. We know that Lake Superior effects are with weather in the winter. We get lake effect snow. Sometimes we get lake effect rain in the fringe seasons. Does Lake Superior affect the formation of thunderstorms as it comes across? Does it kill them? Does it spawn them? What effect does it have?
Lake Superior does affect our weather throughout the spring and summer season. It has a couple of effects. One is oftentimes it does tend to quash the thunderstorm potential a little bit just because of the cool lake breezes that do come on shore, especially across the Keweenaw where you can get the lake breezes from both sides of Lake Superior. So it kind of, especially early in the season, May into June, that cooler air, marine air, will usually prevent the potential of thunderstorms, or at least stronger thunderstorms. But the flip side of that is those cold lake breeze boundaries that do push inland oftentimes will be the trigger point for thunderstorms during the summertime season as well. So further inland, if you go into like from Marquette County or along the Seney stretch across the UP where the lake breezes from Michigan and Lake Superior are coming together and colliding, that's the typical zone where the lakes are having a big influence and actually forcing and causing our thunderstorm activity to develop in the summer season.
Now, we know that weather radar here in the Keweenaw is a little bit limited sometimes because the radar is located in Negaunee, and we've got the curvature of the earth and the Huron Mountains in between that kind of block that signal a little bit. We know it doesn't work real well for lake effect snow. Is it good and reliable in terms of the higher clouds that bring in those thunderstorms and other severe weather?
Yes, it is in the summertime because the depth of the thunderstorm clouds are so much higher than lake effect snow clouds in the wintertime. Our radar does give us a pretty good view of any thunderstorm activity that is moving into the Keweenaw. So we have a pretty good idea of the storms that are severe and aren't severe. And it gives us, I mean, it's not the perfect picture. Obviously, we wouldn't like those slices to be cut out on the lowest elevation of the radar up through the Houghton Hancock area. But fortunately, when the radar tilts up just a little bit higher, then we have a pretty good view of what's occurring up there. across the Keweenaw versus what we see in the wintertime, where immediately we're not seeing any snow at all, but yet we know it's snowing like crazy up across the Keweenaw Peninsula.
Talking with Matt Zika from the National Weather Service as we head into severe weather season here in the Copper Country. You and I have talked in the past about the need for people on the ground in this area to help out with damage reports and spotting reports, weather spotters. Have you set up, or have you maybe already done, maybe I'm too late, weather spotter training for this year?
Actually, we haven't yet, and we're just kind of getting back in the swing of things now post-pandemic as far as going out in the community and talking to folks. And I don't have a date officially on the books yet, but there probably will be a date in June that we'll probably have there at the university. Usually it's at the ATDC building there at Michigan Tech. And so folks should just monitor our website, weather.gov/MQT, and we'll have a schedule up there. So probably during the month of June, there'll be an opportunity for folks who are interested in reporting information of the Weather Service, our citizen scientists that we call them, that relay information when storms move through the area and report rainfall, snow, and things like that. So that'll be something for folks to watch out for as we head through the next couple of months.
Good, and we'll try to pass that date on when you are able to provide it to us. What kind of commitment do you expect from somebody who signs up as a weather spotter? What kind of responsibilities do they take on?
Well, here in the UP, things are different than the folks that people watch the shows on the Discovery Channel, where they're getting in their cars and they're chasing down tornadoes and thunderstorms. Here in the UP, we just tell folks, let the weather come to them if they see something unusual. If a storm moves through and some tree limbs were blown down, or they have hail that falls out of a thunderstorm, that's when we expect folks to notify us. And there's so many ways nowadays for that information to get to the Weather Service. So either filling out a storm report form on our website, weather.gov/MQT. They can go through our social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, relay information that way. They can call our office and let us know that they had severe weather move through their area. And all that information is then used by our forecasters to issue better warnings for the folks then further downstream. And people are much more apt to respond to weather warnings when they hear a storm has already done some sort of damage or produced large hail. If we can include those storm spotter reports in our successive warnings, people are more likely to take those warnings more serious and actually seek shelter when we want them to.
So we want to keep you guys informed as to what's really going on the ground over here. And again, we'll have an opportunity for folks to sign up and take the basic training to become storm spotters, hopefully coming up within the next couple of months. As we get to the end of our segment here, Matt Zika, let's take a quick look back at this past winter. We passed 300 inches, I think, officially in snowfall total here on the Keweenaw Peninsula, at least in some locations. That's a little bit more than average, so a little bit snowier winter than average for us?
Yes, it was. Just on a little bit above average. Obviously, the whole Keweenaw Peninsula didn't see 300 inches of snow, but the areas that, you know, we typically hear approaching that level did. And compared to the last couple of winters, which have been, the winter prior to this one was one of the least snowiest winters we've ever experienced. The winter before that, snowfall was below average and temperatures were well above average. So in comparison, it may have seemed a little extreme this winter, but in the long term, compared to overall normal, it wasn't that unusual of a winter from a temperature and snowfall perspective.
Are we seeing changes in our winters and our summers, our weather patterns, that we attribute to global warming at this point?
There are some localized climate change indicators. If we just take a snapshot from, say, the last 20 to 30 years, I think the most notable local trends we see are the summers lasting longer into the early fall. So our Septembers and Octobers, probably 90% of them over the last 20 years, the temperatures have been above normal during those months. So our summer lasts longer into the fall season. On the flip side, we're seeing a trend where our winters try to hang on a little bit longer into the early spring. So a lot of our Aprils and Mays over the last 20 years, our temperatures have been below normal. And we've seen some blockbuster snow events during the month of April, even into early May, over the last 20 years. And looking out over the next couple of weeks as we head through the remainder of April, most signs suggest a pretty cool pattern, and there'll be several opportunities for more wintry, sloppy weather as we head through the remainder of the month of April.
And that kind of confirms what I have been thinking over the last few years, that the dial seems to have moved a little bit. Spring, summer comes later, fall starts a little bit later, and the whole thing just seems to have moved by about 2 or 3 weeks.
Yep, that's exactly right. And, you know, at this point now, having that trend over a 20 to 30 year time period, I mean, you could kind of clearly say that it is a slight climate shift that's going on right now based off all the data and the temperatures that we've been experiencing. So that's probably the most clear-cut, obvious thing with regards to climate change trends here in the UP is that shift that you just mentioned.
Matt Zika with the National Weather Service, thank you so much for your time on Copper Country Today. And of course, we'll be following your reports and listening for your warnings when they are needed and such over the summer. Thank you for your time. Have a great Easter.
Thank you very much for having me on.